Welcome to the State of Education with Melvin Adams. Today, our guest is Sheila Qualls, who shares special insight into critical race theory as well as observations about Black History Month. We hope you enjoy part one of this two-part series.
My guest today is Sheila Qualls. Sheila is the executive director of an organization called Take Charge. It is a nonprofit that strives to unite Americans, regardless of their background, toward a shared history and common sets of beliefs. It champions the notion that the promise of America works for everyone, regardless of race or social standing. Prior to leading Take Charge, Sheila was a national speaker who addressed the significance of a wife's role in marriage. She was also an award-winning journalist, a blogger, and a personal coach. She maintains an active blog, which you can find. It's called The Not So Excellent Wife at patheos.com. All right. So she also holds bachelor's degrees in English and journalism from Cameron University and a master's of arts in communication from the University of Oklahoma. Sheila's been married for 35 years. Congratulations.
Thank you.
She and her husband have five children. She has homeschooled for 20 years, and she and her husband, Kendall, live in Minnesota with their black lab, Largo. All right. Well, welcome, Sheila. So glad to have you joining us today for this blog and for this time of sharing together.
Well, thank you for having me. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Well, let's start off by, why don't you tell us a little bit about your family, particularly growing up and living in the United States. Look, you're African-American. Right now we are in Black History Month. Is that correct?
That is correct.
And so talk to us a little bit about your perspective as a Black American and your history.
You know, I always come at this sort of through the lens of my father. Okay. My father was born in the Jim Crow South in 1929 in Memphis, Tennessee. So that speaks volumes about what his life was like growing up. He drank out of the colored water fountains. He used the colored restrooms. He rode in the back of the bus. He experienced all the stuff or the things that we see, you know, we now see and watch on TV and that we hear about. This was real life for him. He joined the segregated military. He was one of the last units of Buffalo soldiers, and Buffalo soldiers were all Black units before President Truman desegregated the army in 1948. So he then began in a segregated army, which obviously, you know, when you first do something, things aren't, you know, they don't run smoothly. So he still dealt with all of the racism because the army is made up of people from all over the world.
Right.
I'm sorry, all over the country. And so he still dealt with, you know, racism and unfairness, things that he would have dealt with if he had stayed in the South. But he left the South because he did not want that kind of a life for himself or for his family. He married my mom. They were young, had eight children. I have seven brothers and sisters. And he instilled in us a work ethic. Family was important to him. Faith was important to him. And I think the biggest legacy that he left us, he died last year, but the biggest legacy he left us was personal accountability. Wow. We are accountable for our own actions. We can't blame somebody else when things don't work out the way that we want them to. He was just like a man of faith, and he didn't instill in us a bitterness. So when I see all of this talk about systemic racism and how the country was only designed to, the promise of America was only designed for a select few, you know, I think this is incredible. People who truly lived through systemic racism, I think it's an insult to them. And I think it's an insult to that legacy. Martin Luther King fought and died so that people could be judged by the content of their character, not the color of their skin. And I think that by and large, most people in America view other people that way. Now, do we have racist people? Absolutely, absolutely. But I believe by and large, people do judge people based on the content of their character. And right. In my life growing up, of course I have experienced racism. I mean, that is without a doubt. But I can probably count using both my hands and probably not even all of my fingers, the number of times that I personally have encountered, you know, overt racism. So I just think that, have we gotten better? Absolutely. And too many times in our country and in our society, we don't look at the progress that we've made. You know, we keep looking backwards instead of forwards.
You know, it's interesting. Thank you for sharing that perspective, and particularly with the history of your dad and his upbringing. The reality is this, we all need to know that part of our history. But your generation, my generation, and generations following us, that's not their reality in that same sense. You know, and I think, you know, while it's important for us to know what was said, what happened, what the history actually was, part of the beauty of this country is that we work on our problems and we work to come together. We work to make a more perfect union. And that was the design that the founders had. It wasn't perfect when they got it, when they formed it, and it's not perfect now. But the intention is that we continually keep working together to make a more perfect union. So, you know, I grew up in Africa. Okay. And, you know, I mean, all of my friends were practically all of them were Black because I was in Africa. I came to the States to go to college. I really came here like a foreign student. And so, you know, when I saw some of the attitudes that certain individuals had, it just shocked me because, you know, in a very real sense, I was kind of colorblind when it came to humanity. There's one human race. There aren't multiple human races. There's one human race. And so, but with that perspective, can we talk just a little bit about today and, you know, some of the things that are being taught in our schools and being kind of pushed into the marketplace of ideas, the critical race theory and other concepts. You know, some people think that's wonderful because it exposes the problems, and we do need to expose our problems. The other side of it, though, is it can create all kinds of other unintended consequences, starting with our suspicions and attitudes and behaviors toward one another that does not necessarily bring us together. What are your perspectives on those things?
Critical race theory is, it's not about race. We call it critical race theory, but it is really not about race. A lot of people are confused about it because they think that maybe it's a new civil rights movement. Maybe it's about equality, but it's not a new civil rights movement, and it's not about equality. It's about equity. And they use the word equity because it sounds a lot like equality, and it sounds like it would be a good word, you know, diversity, equity, and inclusion. Those are things that we should all be for, right? But when you get down to the definition of what they are talking about, when I say they, I mean the radical left, what they're talking about by diversity, equity, and inclusion, it's really exclusive. Mm-hmm. You know, there's one viewpoint and that viewpoint is theirs. And critical race theory was actually birthed from critical theory. And critical theory is a Marxist ideology that came to this country, I believe in the 20s or 30s. And it was all about class warfare. And so when they brought it to this country, that really didn't fly. This Marxist idea in our country didn't fly. It wasn't taking off. It didn't get out, you know, off the ground, because people thought, well, you know what? We're just going to work a little bit harder. You know, this is America. You know, we're free. And so the idea never really took off in America. So fast forward about 30, 40 years, and they inserted the word race into critical theory. And critical race theory, critical theory morphed into critical race theory, because race is such an emotionally charged word. And they know that, you know, our country has a history of it, and that's a huge scar on our country. And no one wants to be called a racist. So anytime you mention the word race, people's ears prick up and they feel like, well, we've got to do something about this because this is a problem. Mm-hmm. And I believe that they are creating a problem. They are creating a class of victims, perpetual victims, and people who will never, ever get out of their circumstances because they are being told that they can't make it because of white privilege. They can't make it because of systemic racism, that the promise of America was only for a select few. It's not for everyone. The country is fundamentally flawed because our founding fathers were white men. And so therefore they set up a system to protect themselves and to protect people like them. And that could not be further from the truth. These people are masters with words, masters with words. So when you say, you know, like I said, equity sounds like a nice word, you know, but it doesn't mean what you think it means. Anti-racism. Well, if you're not, which means racism. So if you are against anti-racism, what does that make you? Well, that makes you a racist. So this play on words where they take them and they twist the definitions and they twist the meanings, the definition of racism has been expanded beyond discriminating against someone because of the color of their skin. It's been expanded to like a societal definition, you know, systems that were set up to discriminate against certain groups of people. And I think that this is rampant in our society, and it in our corporations, in our government. It is everywhere that we look. And I believe that when we look back on this, and people who were on the side of critical race theory who were for that, they are going to be proven to be wrong, because this does absolutely nothing good for our children. You cannot teach children that they are permanent victims. Right. And you can't teach other children that they are permanent oppressors and that they should be ashamed of their whiteness. And it has really gone way, way, way farther than I think anyone who wasn't paying attention expected it to go. Mm-hmm. This has been moving forward in our system, in our school system, for many, many, many years. And a lot of people have just been asleep at the wheel, not even knowing that it's happening. And now all of a sudden it's like, where did this come from? Well, it didn't just pop up. It's been around, and we are getting a look at what it actually looks like when it is actualized in classrooms and in corporations.
So we hear a lot about this word racism. You know, I've traveled a lot. I've been in a lot of countries. And I just see this as a fundamental human flaw. It's part of the nature of man to want to, you know, we like what we know, right? I mean, that's just a human thing. You like what you know, and you tend to be suspicious of things you don't know. And so, I mean, in Africa, I mean, we don't hear about that on the news, but I mean, Africa has been throughout its history torn in civil wars and so forth. And it's called tribalism. It's one tribe, it's one language group, it's one people group that's, you know, against another. They're fighting over land, they're fighting over rights, they're fighting over, you know, offense because you did something to me or to my grandfather or to somebody. The same thing is true. You can find that all throughout Asia. You can find it all over the place, you know. And so I don't, it to me, this is not, has nothing to do with the color of a person's skin or how they look. It has to do with my perspective of myself and my perspective of somebody else. Right. Yeah,
you're right. You're right. It has it has absolutely nothing to do with race. And you said a couple of very important things. You know, number one, this in this country, when we see something wrong, we try to fix it. You know, that's what we do. We're a country of laws. And when we see something that's unfair, we work to fix it. And slavery is not unique to the United States. I think a lot of people just don't know their history. It is not unique to the United States. It has existed since the beginning of time. Yep. We are the least racist country in the world, in the entire world. And this is the least racist time in our country's history. And if you think, you know, anyone who thinks that they can find a country that is less racist than we are, I say, have at it. And, you know, when you find that country, let us all know. You know, in the Dominican Republic, you know, that island is, you know, it's split in half. Haiti is one side. The DR is the other side.
Right.
Huge racism among people. And it's like you said, it's this tribalism. And I believe that's what they are reducing us to. It's tribalism. If Absolutely. You belong to a certain group, then you have all the characteristics of that group, regardless of who you are. Critical race theory says there are no individuals. Everyone is a part of a group. And I think tribalism is a very good word for it.
And that's I think so, but I even go beyond that. You look in even civilized societies and you have class systems. Certainly, you know, you think of India and places like that. But I mean, look, Europe is full of class systems. And so is the United States. You have the people who have the money and they hang out with, you know, people like them. And then you got the blue collar workers and, you know, it's just a human thing, right? Mm-hmm. And at the end of the day, what all of us should be striving for is how can I, you know, look, I operate out of a Judeo-Christian ethic, okay? And so for me, the most important thing is, how can I help somebody in need? And am I my brother's keeper? And so if I am, you know, I'm going to treat that person the way I would want to be treated. And if we would all do that, I think, you know, this problem would take care of itself. And that's fundamentally what our founding fathers were striving to do for this country, to set us up with that kind of a mindset. And of course, we know that that is under huge attack in our culture today.
Absolutely. And this is one of the, to your point, one of the few countries where you can be born on the bottom rung of society, but you don't have to stay there. You have an opportunity to, you know, prosper and move your way up into the top rung of society. And in a lot of other countries and cultures, that is not possible. That is not possible, but it is possible in this country.
Yeah. And I'm going to just, we're way off track here, but while we're having fun at it, I mean, there is no other country in the history of the world that has done more charity and more help to other countries in need. And I'm not talking about military. I'm talking about whenever there is a calamity, when there's a famine, an earthquake, a tsunami, or whatever. I mean, sure, people from around the world rally, but Americans lead the way. Yeah. Americans lead the way in providing assistance to others in need, whether it's in our own counties or communities, or if it's somewhere clear across the world where we've never been before, there's something about, you know, look, we want to help. And that's a wonderful thing. And that's one of the things that makes us a great people. And if we will continue to do good, we will be blessed.
Absolutely. And we don't put a qualifier on it. We don't say, oh, well, this tragedy was in Haiti, so we're not sending money there, but this tragedy was in Europe, so we're going to send money there. We don't put qualifiers on it.
No.
And that's how people, that's how we live our lives as Americans. We don't put qualifiers on helping people.
Mm-hmm. So this is Black History Month. You know, sometimes there are people who say, you know, it's not healthy for us to separate and isolate out people groups and do special focuses toward whatever groups and kind of draw special attention to this, that. Others say, yes, it's important because, you know, people need, there needs to be a greater understanding of history, a greater understanding of particularly various minority communities. What's your perspective on that?
You know, I believe at a point in our country, there was a point in our country when Black History Month was a good and useful thing. Mm-hmm. The way it's going today, we glorify criminals. We glorify athletes. We glorify entertainers. We're not talking about the true heroes of Black history. Yeah. And, you know, we should be learning the history of all people. We shouldn't have to segregate our history and say, oh, this is Black History Month, this is Hispanic American History Month. You know, we shouldn't have to do that. We should be talking about the contributions that everyone has made to our society. And I think that Black history has become more about ideology and, you know, telling us how we should think and how we should feel and reminding us of the wrongs that we have been done, you know, as a culture, as a race in the past of this country. And I don't think that that's healthy. I don't think it's healthy at all.
Let me switch gears just a little bit here. When you were starting out, you were talking to us about your father. And a couple of things stood out to me in what you said. You said that he was a man of faith and he was a man who taught you work ethic and so forth. Okay, you have five children. And all of us as adults should be caring about the next generation of citizens.
Thanks so much for tuning in with us today. That's what we're all about here at Noah Webster Educational Foundation. We want to make it easier for you to engage with your local government and school system, whether you're a parent, educator, legislator, or simply a concerned citizen. Before we end today's episode, here's a little snippet of our next episode.
The school is not responsible for teaching your child. And I think a lot of times when we send our kids to school, we think, number one, it's a safe place. And so a lot of parents don't believe that these horrible things that we say with the critical race theory, a lot of people just flat out don't believe that that is happening in our schools.
Curious how you can make a difference? Join the conversation today on our Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter. Learn about more ways you can help by visiting our website at www.nwef.org. We look forward to you tuning in with us again for The State of Education with Melvin Adams.